So this morning, we are finishing our Talking Points series. And this whole series is just about establishing yourself as a person worth listening to. Or, you know, establishing yourself in this position where people can trust your word and will listen to you. And as a person who can have influence in other people's lives. And in the first week, we actually talked about how a lack of clarity can undermine your influence, and how instead of being unclear in our speech, we can choose to speak with controlled clarity. And then we talked about how complaining corrupts your relationships with others. It actually can corrupt every aspect of your life, but especially your relationships with others and your influence in their lives. And I kind of left us on a bit of a cliffhanger last week. I talked about the problem of complaining, but then I kind of teased, well, what is it that we actually do instead? Of course, we talked about that a little bit, but what else do we do instead? And we're going to touch on that today as we close. Because today, we're going to talk about our reactions. We're going to talk about how our reactions affect our reputation. Now, you've probably heard the phrase that actions speak louder than words. And in many cases, when it comes to how people perceive us, that is true. That our reactions or that actions speak louder than words, and that if our actions don't align with our words lose its meaning. And while actions do speak louder than words, our reactions speak loudest. When it comes to how people see us and view us, it's our reactions that speak loudest. Because we can all force ourselves to behave for a specific period of time. I mean, that's what we do on Sunday mornings. We come here and we force ourselves to sit quietly and try to stay awake and force ourselves to behave. And we can all control our words as well. We can all, you know, to a certain extent, when we're meeting a new person, we can talk about ourselves in a way that makes us look good. Or on social media, you know, we can paint a perfect picture of our lives. So to an extent, for a very specific period of time, we can influence our actions and our words in order to portray ourselves in a more positive light. But our reactions offer unfiltered glimpses into the kind of person we truly are. We think that our good deeds and our positive words will outweigh our poor reactions, and that our reactions, and especially our negative reactions, don't necessarily have much of an influence on how the people view us. But the truth is, our reactions determine our reputation. We like to think and we hope that it's our best days that define us in the eyes of others. But unless you're actually doing something or have done something extraordinarily special and amazing and sacrificial in someone's life, that's not necessarily the case. Because what is most memorable? The bad days. Oftentimes, the things that stick out in people's memories the most is the hurtful words, is the mistakes you've made. And those things tend to outweigh the best days. And this is especially true for people who aren't in our immediate circle. This is especially true for just the people that we meet out on the street, or the people we only have a certain number of conversations with, or the coworkers who aren't necessarily our close friends. They don't know all of our life details. Because if you have one bad reaction, if someone sees you overreact to a situation, to react and respond in a situation with anger or complaining or grumbling or something along those lines, that's how they will forever see you. Even if they don't know the full context, that is how they will view you. And now often, we know this, and what's our response? We say, well, I don't really care what those people think. I'm not here to impress those people. I only care about what my family thinks or my friends. They really know me. I don't care what other people think. First of all, is that true? Second of all, you should. We've quoted King Solomon a lot in this series, perhaps the wisest man to ever live. And he wrote in Proverbs, "A good name is more desirable than great riches. To be esteemed is better than silver or gold." In other words, having a good reputation around those among you is even more valuable than the greatest riches in the world. And he should know, because he is one of the wealthiest humans to ever have lived, and certainly the wealthiest person who is alive in his time. And he's saying, look, I would give that all up to have a good reputation if I didn't already have one. Because establishing and maintaining a positive reputation is incredibly valuable, because it can open doors and create new opportunities. That person you meet on the street, you never know if they're going to show up again in your life. I think we've all heard stories about someone saying something negative to someone when they're waiting to be interviewed, right, for a job, or they're waiting to be hired, and they later realize in the interview that the person they said something negative to was actually the boss, is actually the person interviewing them. I've heard multiple stories like that. But having a positive reputation can open and create new opportunities. It can create friendships and bonds. And as this series is all about, it can establish you as a person worth listening to. And Paul and Peter actually repeatedly wrote in letters to early Christians about how a good reputation can actually disarm your enemies. These are Peter's words, but there's several verses that are like this. Peter wrote, "Live such good lives among the pagans," meaning among outsiders, among those who aren't Christians, "that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits." Other interpretations say that they aren't able to accuse you of doing something wrong, that they might be your enemy, but they can't find a specific thing to point to because you have such a good reputation, because you are living such a good life. And as we'll talk about, you're responding and reacting to negative situations well. So reactions determine your reputation. So what kind of person do you want to be known as? If your reaction determines your reputation, then how do you want to be known? Because just as a positive reaction and reacting well to certain situations and difficult situations can give you a positive reputation, negative reactions set a negative reputation. King Solomon also wrote about this. He warned that if you are quick to react to something with anger, you will just be surrounded with conflict. He wrote, "A hot-tempered person stirs up conflict, but the one who is patient calms a quarrel." If you're known as a hot-tempered person, as an easily angered person, as someone who's always reacting to situations with anger or an outburst or an inappropriate reaction, you're just going to have conflict in your life. People aren't going to be your allies. They're going to feel like they're butting against you. They're going to feel like they are perhaps your enemy, because your reaction determines your reputation. So if you react to a situation with anger, how are people going to view you? They'll view you as someone perhaps with anger issues, as someone that you have to kind of be careful around, as someone you have to walk on eggshells around. If you're always responding sarcastically to someone who maybe frustrates you or annoys you, or respond sarcastically to a question, you could be viewed as frustrating person, perhaps a hurtful person, perhaps an unhelpful person. If you're quick to point out a flaw or an error when someone does something, they'll view you as overly critical. That would be your reputation. If you're overly defensive to criticism, I have to admit, this is an area of struggle in mind that I'm trying to improve in. If you are overly defensive to criticism, you're viewed as an unreasonable person. People can't reason with you. People can't help you and guide you in your life because they know you're just going to respond with overly defensive reaction. And when you're constantly complaining about something, as we talked about last week, with someone who asks something of you, you're difficult to work with. Your coworkers will be like, they're just so difficult to work with. I can never get them to do anything. They're always complaining. Your negative reactions will give you a negative reputation. And we think that's not fair. We think, well, that's unfair that that's how people view us. Because our reactions are only a momentary lapse in judgment. We will often follow it up, sorry, that's not really me. That's not who I am. You just caught me in a bad moment, or it was just a slip of the tongue. Or as we talked about, like, that wasn't really my true intention. But Jesus actually said otherwise. Jesus said our reactions reveal our hearts. As I said, that it's an unfiltered view into our heart. It's an unfiltered glimpse into what we carry inside of us, what kind of a person we are. Matthew documented this conflict between Jesus and, of course, the religious leaders of that time, the Pharisees. And he was talking about the words that they speak with. And he said, "You brood of vipers, how can you who are evil say anything good? For the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. A good man brings good things out of the good stored up in him, and an evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in him. But I tell you that everyone will have to give account on the day of judgment for every empty word they have spoken. By your words you will be acquitted, by your words you will be condemned." We read that in earlier messages, and boy, that's a scary thought. But he says the words that we speak and our reactions to situations originate in our hearts. It didn't come out of nowhere. It has a source. And Jesus said that source is within you. And other people know this, that it's a glimpse into what's going on inside, regardless of how we view our own reactions. And here's a good litmus test to see what's in your heart. And I'm going to step on toes a little bit, stepping on my own toes. What are your reactions when you're driving? What are your reactions when you're surrounded by poor drivers? How do you respond when someone cuts you off in traffic? How do you respond when you're driving behind someone who's just driving the speed limit? Do you extend grace to those people, or do you respond in anger? Are you defaulting to trust? Paul wrote that part of loving someone is trusting them, and we're supposed to love everyone. Do you default to a place of trust and say they have a reason for why they're driving the way that they are? Maybe they're experiencing a medical emergency. All right, we often don't think about that, but you know what? I have type 1 diabetes. I never used to think about a medical emergency while driving. Now one of my greatest fears is having low blood sugar while driving, because that'll affect my judgment, and potentially if it's not treated, I could pass out. Are they having a medical emergency? Are they rushing to the hospital because their wife is giving birth? Or maybe they're just, you know, they're brand new to driving. We've all been there. Or are you swearing at them, either out loud or in your head? Are you extending the grace? Because the way you react to people when you're driving kind of reveals what's in your heart. And this is especially scary for Christians, or for those of us who consider ourselves a follower of Jesus, because the rest of the world is watching to see if we are different. The rest of the world, the outsiders that Paul and Peter talk about, is watching our reactions. They're looking at our reactions to gain those glimpses into our heart because they want to know, are they actually different? Are we actually different? Or is all of this just talk? Is this just an empty religion to make ourselves feel better? Or is there actually significance to this movement? Jesus said, make a tree good and its fruits will be good, or make a tree bad and its fruit will be bad. For a tree is recognized by its fruit. To the rest of the world, we are recognized as people who are different by the fruit that we produce. It's either positive reactions or it's negative reactions. It's actually reactions that set us apart as stars in the sky, as we talked about last week, or it's reactions that look the exact same way as the rest of the world. There's either a difference there or there's not a difference there. It's a terrifying thought. And for followers of Jesus, we should be different. Because Jesus called us to react with disproportionate grace. Disproportionate grace. This means overreacting in the positive. Not overreacting in the negative sense, but overreacting in the positive sense. Doing something for someone far beyond what they deserve. Not just choosing not to react to something, but reacting in a way that it turns heads, that it doesn't make sense to people, that they look and they're like, why would they do that to someone who hurt them? What kind of a reaction is that to help someone who just hurt them? What was that? An overreaction in the positive. In his most famous sermon, the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus gave examples of what this actually looks like. He said, you have heard that it was said, eye for eye and tooth for tooth. Now, this is referring to a Jewish law that they had of just equal punishment, of they did this, you do this, okay? It was in order to avoid extensive retaliation, to avoid something blowing out of hand. But Jesus said, but I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. Now, we've all heard this, the phrase of turn the other cheek. This is a widely known and quoted verse. Unfortunately, it's often misunderstood because this verse is not about self-defense. All right, this is a common misunderstanding of questioning, does that mean if someone's assaulting us, we just stand there and don't do anything? That's actually not what Jesus is referring to, because notice he says, if anyone slaps you on the right cheek. Now, most people are right-handed. So in order to slap someone on the right cheek with your right hand, that's actually a backhand. And a backhand then really had the same definition that it does to us now. He's actually referring to an insult. He's actually referring to a slight, something that's meant to egg us on, something that's meant to provoke us into reacting in an equal or like manner. It's an insult that's meant to bait you into conflict. But Jesus is saying, treat the insult as something unworthy of your attention, and even accept the fact that others may come. It's accepting the fact that they just insulted me and I'm going to turn the other cheek and I'm going to take the next blow that's coming as well. It's not about allowing people to beat you to a bloody pulp. That's not what he's referring to. Self-defense, you should defend yourself. But it's referring to not reacting to an insult, to not give them the reaction that they're looking for. He went on to say, and if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. Now we have the term go the extra mile. Now in Jesus's time, the audience to this knew exactly what he was talking about because Roman soldiers could force any Jewish citizen to stop what they're doing and carry items or carry a load or carry something for them for a standard mile. They could just walk past you on the street. You're doing your own thing. And they say, you come here, carry this for me for a mile or about 1,000 paces. And Jesus is saying, when you do that, don't respond by grumbling and complaining, as we talked about last week. Instead, go with them 2 miles. Go with them an extra mile. It's in direct contrast to grumbling and complaining. It's being willing to do it and in fact saying, you know what, I'll do you better. Then he said, give to the one who asks you and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. You have heard it said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. This is common sense. Love our friends and we just ignore and hate those who hate us. He said, but I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. So when we choose not to retaliate, when we choose not to overreact, people will recognize us as different. People will recognize us as children of God. This is how people will see the difference. This is how people will view us as stars in the sky in contrast to the rest of the world. Now, does this feel like weakness? Does this look like we're losing? To not retaliate, to submit what to other people want from us? These are actually demonstrations of the strength through submission. Because when you go above and beyond for someone who asks you of something, you're actually retaining control of the situation. You are showing that the abuse and the insults and the burdens that they're putting on you cannot overcome the power of God within you. When someone asks you to do something, when the Roman soldiers told people, you have to carry this for a mile, they maintain control of the situation by saying, no, I'll carry it for two. That I'm choosing a better reaction. It's losing on purpose. It's choosing submission, and that doesn't make sense to us, but to the entire world, it looked like Jesus lost. To the entire world, when you look at the death of Jesus, it looked like he's lost. Even his followers, his disciples, thought he had lost. But we know now he wasn't playing by the rules of the world. He didn't look at winning and losing the way that we do. He was playing a different game entirely. Luke investigated the death of Jesus, and he gave us an account. He said, when they came to the place called the skull, they crucified him there along with the criminals, one on his right, the other on his left. And Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. And they divided up his clothes by casting lots. The people stood watching, and the rulers even sneered at him. They said, "He saved others. Let him save himself if he is God's Messiah, the chosen one." And then the soldiers also came up and mocked him. They offered him wine vinegar and said, "If you are the king of the Jews, save yourself." They were provoking Jesus to react. They were looking for him to give a negative reaction, to reveal his true self, or the self that they thought that he was. They said, "Let's egg him on in this position of weakness to get him to act like the rest of us. He's no greater than us." But he didn't. He prayed for his enemies and he forgave them. And when Jesus died, he called out with a loud voice, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." When he had said this, he breathed his last. The centurion, seeing what had happened, one of the Roman soldiers there, praised God and said, "Surely this was a righteous man." Jesus' reaction in his weakest moment of disproportionate grace, grace beyond what his enemies deserved, showed even his murderers that he was different, that he was a righteous man. He could have reacted in the way that would have benefited himself. He could have saved himself as they were provoking him and mocking him about. He could have easily called down an army of angels to wipe out his enemies. He could have used the power of God to just step down from the cross and declared himself in that moment the king of the earth. That probably would have been a strong enough demonstration to show his power. But he didn't. He didn't react the way that you and I would. He chose something greater. He chose submission. Now, to really answer last week's question, and truly, this is the best way to just handle life in general, to handle every situation and circumstance that you face. Submit to something greater than yourself. Submit to something greater than yourself. Now, especially as modern American Christians, we don't like the term submission. It seems kind of offensive to us. We don't want people to control us. And to a certain extent, that's good. But you and I all crave autonomy. We want to be in control of our life. We want to be able to live by our own terms, to have the freedom to make our own decisions, to do what I want, to do what makes me happy. But I have a question. What is the common denominator in every regret that you have? What is the common denominator in every negative overreaction you've had? What is the common denominator in every mistake you've made? It's you. You were there for all of your worst decisions. You were there for all of your regretful actions. You were there for all of your overreactions. But submission takes the pressure off of ourselves. Jesus said, "Whoever wants to be my disciple, if you want to follow me, you must deny yourself, take up your cross daily, and follow me." Daily submission is the key to a life without regret. This entire message series could be summed up in this: daily submission to the will of God and to the power of the Holy Spirit. You want to speak with controlled clarity? Submit to God. You want to avoid the corruption of complaining? Submit to God. You want to be able to react to every situation in life with disproportionate grace? Submit to God. Daily submission to the will of God and the power of the Holy Spirit. And if you do that, the result is what we've been talking about. You'll naturally complain less. You'll naturally let your yeses be yes and your noes be no. You'll naturally respond to everything with grace. Jesus did this because he knew the death and the punishment that awaited for him. And shortly before this, in the garden, before he knew he was about to be arrested and murdered and beaten and tortured and crucified, he said, "Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me. But nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done." Essentially, "Lord, I submit, Father, I submit my will to you." He prayed a prayer of submission. He submitted himself, even to the point of death, to the will of his Father. And if he did this for us, who are we to do any less? So here's my challenge for you over this week and specifically the next few weeks, and I'd love to hear how this goes for you. Begin your morning with a prayer of submission. Begin your morning by choosing to take up your cross, to die to yourself daily, to say, "Less of me, God, and more than you." And a specific challenge for today is to think about your average week. Think about a regularly occurring situation that frustrates you, whether it's a coworker saying something. If every Monday morning a coworker asks you something and you never react to it well, if it's something that your husband or your wife does, they never take out the trash when they're supposed to, or they never put away their laundry, and you tend to complain and overreact. Whatever the situation is, think about that for a moment. Ask yourself, what would disproportionate grace look like in this situation? And when a frustration arises throughout your week, ask yourself the question, what would losing look like? What would it look like for me to lose this fight? What would it look like for me to submit? So that's what Jesus did. He chose what others may consider and what we may consider a loss. But he did it for the sake of you and I. He did it so that he could submit to the will of God. He chose disproportionate grace, an act of grace and submission that turned heads and changed history. So instead of overreacting to the situations of life, let's choose to overreact in the positive, to go the extra mile, to turn the other cheek, to not give them the reaction that they're looking for, but a reaction that causes them to stop and stare and wonder, why on earth would they do that? Why are they so different? Because that will establish you as a person of good reputation and as a person worth listening to.